It will call to order the Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission for, originally scheduled for Wednesday, July 7th, but now this is Thursday, July 15th, 2021. I believe the first thing we need to do is excuse members. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a motion to excuse?
I move that we excuse Jim Dugan and Ken Richardson from tonight's meeting.
Okay, I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
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 Next item is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Next thing is adoption of the minutes. So you might want to just take a second or two to look at the June 2nd, 2021 minutes.
I move to adopt the minutes from June 2nd.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Public comments. Nobody in the audience. Is there anybody online?
We have one person online.
Okay. If the person online wants to speak.
Star 6.
Star 6. Okay. All right. Hearing no interest in speaking in public comments, we will close that session. Old business. First is underground utilities update. We have that as Ken as being the lead on that, but I think there was a meeting. And if you want to kind of just bring us up to date.
Yes, we met with a representative from Duke Energy, and she was going to provide some high-level maps and things that we could kind of mull through and study and try to get some idea of, you know, the extent of what the project would be. We had some good conversation and some technical things, but it's still some fact-finding and putting together kind of a high-level strategy of what we're going to try to attempt to do here. She has not provided those documents yet at this time. I know Ken's been reaching out to her several times in the last couple of weeks, but until we get those documents, we're a little bit at a standstill, but that's going to be our next step.
Okay. Catherine, you have any comments or anything like that?
No.
Any contribution? Any? All right. All right, very good. Next item, 5.2, land use plan update. This has me as doing land use, but I'm going to turn it over to our council member here.
We received the results of the survey at our last meeting, and basically the gist was that people are happy with the way the town is living and want to maintain like it is. Of course, there's some side comments, problems on the beach, various other things. Some concern about the 35-foot height limit. But all in all, the survey was very positive. Mm-hmm. We will have our next meeting in August, I believe.
No.
So we'll have the public hearing the 29th of July.
We'll have workshop.
Before the public is invited to attend, probably have two or three of these over the course of the weeks.
If I can just add to that, I did go through every comment. I think there are about 20 pages of comments right there. And I saw a lot about people complaining about paid parking and dogs on the beach. But a lot of people like the community. They like the small town atmosphere, the family atmosphere. I mean, that certainly came out. And one of the things that I thought would be useful is a separation as to whether the residents that are complaining about the paid parking and dogs on the beach, or whether these are the tourists coming in and complaining about that. And that's the only, because you couldn't tease that out. It was just I would assume it's the tourists that are complaining about paid parking and dogs on the beach more than the residents.
I've only had two residents with any comment.
Yeah.
In any negative form about paid parking.
And so, yeah, I think we got to be careful about interpreting all those side comments. Right, yeah, particularly when it's people that are used to coming out here and not paying for parking, and all of a sudden they have to pay for parking. But any other further comments about land use? I certainly agree that when you certainly look at the statistics, people seem very happy with Curie Beach. And in fact, there were several things that complimented the town council as to what they were doing you know, so I think that was very nice too. All right. Next item, electric vehicle chargers. I got a very, very short discussion on this. This came about, I think, from our discussion last time about electric vehicles and kind of the rise of electric vehicles. You know, I spent the last week in California, and I have to say, in California, one out of every 10 cars is probably an electric vehicle right now. It is a massively important thing right there. And I just noticed coming back that just driving on the Pleasure Island now, I see, you know, two or three or four Teslas now. So, I mean, we even see, I think, an increase within the Wilmington area and Kiri Beach. But anyway, I was charged with kind of getting a sense about what the cost and the different approaches would be to perhaps having electric vehicle chargers here. There are basically two large networks that, you know, that install this, these sort of things. One is Electrify America, and the other is ChargePoint. And before I kind of give some numbers here, I thought it'd be useful because there is about a 3-minute video on the ChargePoint web page that I think kind of talks about their charging system. So if we could just pull that up, is that possible? Pull up that link for the video on the ChargePoint.
Sorry.
The very first one.
Multitasking.
It's the first link. I sent you three links,
yeah,
I think.
This is the first link.
It's just the first link, yeah. And there's multiple videos on it. It's down in the lower right-hand corner, and it should be the first one that shows the different chargers.
EV charging for businesses.
Probably that's it. I'm not sure. See, it's that video that's right there. That's the one, yeah. Can we get the volume up?
Making sure that
A musical experience. When I watched it at the home, it didn't have the music like that. So, but anyway, what you have there is what's called the CT4000 by ChargePoint. And the way these networks work, and I've done a fair amount of research on this, is you have the manufacturers of the unit, just like what we saw right there. And the CT4000 is the most popular one. It comes in a variety of different. I'll talk about the cost in a second. Then you also have what are called the network providers, and these are the ones that, you know, will put these things together and, you know, provide an app, and then you could be a member, let's say, of ChargePoint or whatever, and then that would allow you to go to up any ChargePoint charger, and then depending on how it's set, you would end up paying or get it for free, you know, because whoever owns that particular charger can set it many different ways. So you can set it for free, or 10 cents a kilowatt hour for your residents, and for tourists you can set it for 40 cents a kilowatt hour. You can change the pricing depending on what time of the day it is, you know, what season of the year it is and all that sort of thing. So it's actually pretty impressive. But the way that it works generally is that you're going to have an app on your phone, and then you hook it up, and yeah, depending on how much electricity you use, it ends up getting charged to your credit card or whatever you pay. Now, what ChargePoint does is they take a percentage of that, and I'm still trying to get a handle on that, and anything above that then is reimbursed to whoever owns the charger. So it is possible, when you look at the cost of this, and I've got some cost figures in a second here, you have the cost of the unit, you have installation costs, you have maintenance costs, you have the network fees that might be associated with it, and that's basically it. You know, so the these are what are called level two. Level one is you plug it into your home 110 volt and it takes, you know, hours and hours and hours to charge. Level two are what are called destination chargers, because the idea here is that it maybe take about 3 hours to charge something or 4 hours to charge something. So, you know, the idea is that you would go, you would plug your EV in, your electrical vehicle in, and you go to the beach or whatever. So destination chargers are what restaurants have, what beach communities have, and these sort of things. Level three chargers are the superchargers that you see out there on the freeway that will charge things that, you know, charge a whole electric vehicle in like 40 minutes or 30 minutes and that sort of thing. So what we're talking about here is clearly a level two type of charger. So anyway, I did some research on this and the unit costs, and I've got calls into both Electrify America as well as ChargePoint. Both of them will give us a proposal free. There's no cost to have them. And it's all online. They're not going to come out and walk around. They'll do this all online. But they'll give us a proposal. There's no cost associated with the proposal or any commitment or all that sort of thing. But just to kind of get a sense, it's not as expensive as I thought it would be. The units, the CT4000 units, which are two charging units, so if we were ever thinking about having four parking spaces have access to charging, you only need two units because each unit has two cords on it. And it runs between $7,000 and $8,000 per unit. Now that's the cost of the unit. That's not installation or maintenance and all that sort of thing. I'm sure they do have a maintenance plan and all that sort of thing. But it's about $7,000 to $8,000. There's a CT4021. One and a CT1000-425, which is a little fancier, which can be controlled with GPSs and all that sort of thing. The other nice thing about these systems too is that once you install it, then you're on their map. So, you know, everybody can immediately just press a button. I've got a couple of apps and I can see where all the chargers are in Wilmington and so forth. So you'd immediately be on the map right here. So anyway, that's the work I'm done. I'm waiting to hear a call back from both of the networks that I've contacted. I've received emails from them, but they obviously want to talk to me in person and stuff like that. And so, you know, they're all anxious to give us a proposal and all that sort of thing. But I thought these things would be $50,000 each, and they're not. They're $7,000 to $8,000 per unit. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. It certainly is expanding. I mean, there's no question about it. But any questions? I think hopefully by next month I'll have some exact. It's impossible to find the cost figures online because they do want to talk to you. That's part of their sales stuff. So I think once I talk to them, I'll have a better handle as to what the costs are.
So you designate certain parking areas for the charging stations?
Yeah, and that wouldn't affect. You could have a charging station, but people would still have to pay for that parking there too. But you could have a charging station, and if people park in that particular space, then they can. You know, you might want to designate it for electric vehicles, you know, and it wouldn't have to be by the beach. It could be back in this area here because it is a destination. So anybody coming here would plug in and want to be here for 3 to 4 hours. So they'd walk to the beach or something like that. But yeah, you'd have a designated space, electric vehicles, but you could still also say they have to have paid parking in those spaces too. I mean, that's certainly up to, we can set the price. I don't know what the city pays for kilowatt hour, probably what, 10 cents a kilowatt hour or something like that. And, you know, you could set the price for 30 cents a kilowatt hour, 20 cents a kilowatt hour, 49 cents a kilowatt hour. The more price you set, if somebody uses it, the more money you get to pay back on the installation costs and the unit costs. So I did look at a blog, and they say that government municipalities can sometimes get breaks on the cost of these things and on the warranties, and there's actually some federal incentives for municipalities to start installing these things. If we would have come in and started looking at this 3 months ago, Duke was given away for free. So, but they no longer have that program. I got on their list that when they start that program again, they'll notify me. But yeah, up to about 3 months ago, Duke was installing these things for free. So, all right. Anything else about electric vehicles? Okay. Next item, John.
Are you sharing?
I don't know. First of all, just want to mention that this is not my text amendment, the proposed text amendment. This is a text amendment proposal by Mickey Adcox, property owner 1211A, Fort Fisher Boulevard North. I'm not real sure why she's not here to advocate for this request. It's a little disappointing in my opinion. But if you have the text amendment in front of you here, the number F, the letter F, is the addition to the text that she would like to see. And the text reads that whole house generators, HVAC units, propane tanks, and other similar equipment within the first 5 feet of the required side yard or the corner lot would be an exception to things that are allowed in the setback area. Now, it's important to know what the definition of a corner lot is when you consider this text amendment. So if you have your code book in front of you, 15.36.060 is the definition of a corner lot. And I'll read that for you real quick.
Just real quick, someone is on the line.
So that definition is for side yards and corner lots where there is a residential use, the minimum width of the side yard along the intersecting street shall be at least 10 feet, which will apply all zones within the town of Coon Beach. So I'll give you an example. This property fronts on Fort Fisher Boulevard, but its side yard fronts on Alabama. So the narrower side of the lot is always considered the front, which is why they've got an address at Fort Fisher Boulevard. So their side yard is Alabama Avenue, and so they have a 10-foot side setback off that property line. There's close to 200 lots, corner lots in Three Beach that this would apply to. We've made changes in the past to exceptions for corner lots, most recently for cantilevers. We allow cantilevers. areas for fireplaces, balconies, bay windows, things like that, of 18 inches in any lot in Kiri Beach, except if it's a quarter lot, we'll allow it to go 24 inches. So there's the text amendment. I'm available for questions. I do believe this is different from other text amendments for what you said were similar. I believe this is different because it deals with quarter lots, which have a more restrictive setback.
Okay.
Can you give me that that code?
15.36.
36. 0060. Can you also give me the applicant's name? I thought this was.
So applicant, well, they haven't actually applied. So,
so technically, is it staff at this point?
They were supposed to come to the meeting.
I just want to make sure that the person online is not here to speak on this particular.
Maybe if that's you online, if you would place star six and let us know you're there.
Nope. Okay. Just a little bit. John sent this to me just to kind of get some, you know, just kind of a heads up. And I thought that given that it is something that we probably see formally, why not just put it on the agenda so we could talk about it? You know, I mean, it kind of made sense. So do you want to have a discussion on this? We've had discussion about things and setbacks several times over the last several years. You know, the whole purpose of a setback, obviously, is for emergency vehicles and some of these sort of things. So, I mean, certainly we have a lot of discussions about setbacks, and I just thought it would be useful to have a conversation about this to kind of give some feedback before it is actually formally proposed to the planning and zoning.
You might have answered my question. I thought my understanding was that this would be the usual PZC review and recommendation on a proposed text amendment. Zoning regulations, so that's not what we're doing.
Well, by putting it on the agenda, it gives the opportunity for that. Because
well, that's a formal step, and I think if we're going to do that, the agenda should carefully reflect that.
My impression is that by putting it on the agenda and then having John here proposing it, that is something that we could have done. We could have made a... But
I just want to know what we're doing.
Right now, I think we're having a discussion.
My point is, that's fine, and that I don't have a problem with that. I just want to make sure we're not, if we're going to discuss it, I just think we need to be clear whether or not we're also going through the formal process of reviewing and reporting.
Given that it's on the agenda, does it matter? Because if we discuss it and don't take action, I mean, we can table this item even though it's on the agenda. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to make a decision. We could table this item if we want to. So we could have a, even though it's formally on it, we can have a discussion and we can decide because we do have a quorum as what we're going to do with this.
I don't have a problem with any way you go about it. I just want the record to be clear what we're doing. It seems to me that if the applicant is not here and if the materials that I prepared. We're with the understanding that this was a staff initiative. Perhaps it would be wiser just to discuss it and then take a motion to put it on the next month's agenda for the formal review and report that's required.
Right. I would have thought that the applicant would have been here too. So,
can we just discuss this in general, disregard the fact that there is a possible applicant about this particular issue? And just have a general discussion about how we generally feel about maybe adding that?
This is no different than any other text amendment. We don't have to have an application to make a text amendment.
All I want is clarity.
Yeah,
I want to know whose text amendment this is and whether we're going through review and report. That's all I want to know so the record's clear on that. If it's a staff amendment, it doesn't matter to me.
No, and I don't think it matters to the P&Z whether it's a staff amendment or not. I mean, you know, it's something that we have on the agenda that we can talk about, and we can then decide what to do with this. I don't think we need any more specificity than that, to be honest. So let's just have a general discussion, and then we'll take a vote as to what we want to do with this. It is on the agenda. So,
John, is there limitations and on the size of a generator?
There are not. Basically, the way that's written is saying that basically you can use 5 feet of that 10-foot setback for a generator, so you can definitely put that in there. But
and so why do we have a 10-foot setback on a corner lot? What's the purpose of 10 feet?
My understanding of it, read the ordinance, is all about visibility and line of sight for additional lots going down the street.
So you don't see it as a safety issue, but more of a aesthetic visibility issue?
I believe that was the intention of placing the more restrictive setback on corner lots, yes, sir.
And then on corner lots, we have the setback, and then we have the right-of-way, which I forget, is it like 75 feet over to the right-of-way to the other side of the street?
It depends on where it's at. In some areas we have a 50-foot right-of-way, in some areas we have 60, and in some areas we have 90.
That's one concern that I have, is that some streets are more narrow. And if we change this, it's going to apply to the entire town.
Which is what it should do.
Right. That's my concern about this.
Yep.
And I mean, I wouldn't care on a 90-foot right-of-way, but on streets where it's only 50-foot. Just a thought that I'm having.
I don't think I really have an issue with what they're proposing here, as long as it stays within the 5 feet. I think that, you know, some of the whole house generators can get rather large, and you know, if it stays within that first 5 feet and meets the space requirements for the equipment, whether it's AC units or generators, I don't have a problem. Propane tanks would be the only vertical tanks. You couldn't use horizontal tanks.
That's correct. Generally, these whole house generators are about 30 inches wide and 50 inches long. That's pretty much the biggest one you're going to see on a whole house.
And about how high? The ones I've seen maybe are about, I don't know, 4 feet high or something like that.
Not even that.
The older versions that you're seeing, these new ones, they're probably 30 inches tall.
30 inches tall? Where propane tanks can be substantially taller than that, you know, up to 5 feet maybe.
Yep.
I'd say, yeah.
You have to go with vertical tanks because of the space requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any safety concern there with putting the propane tanks or the generator closer to the roadway?
As long as it meets the setbacks from the front, they can put the generator there anyway. And if that was a lot inside of a block instead of on a corner, they could do it anyway. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is a corner lot, right? So there's a street going down there. But you have vehicles now with tanks closer to the vehicles.
It's still not a question that it would be on another lot to the property line.
It would be on the side of the house, though. It wouldn't be on your front. Your front setback would have your propane tank.
They said moving traffic is closer to the property. Somebody runs off the road.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It would allow people to bury their propane tanks in their front yard setback also.
Right. I'm going there. Car veers off the road, hits the propane tank, or hits the generator that's connected to.
Yes.
I guess it's a stretch, baby.
Yeah,
it's
letting everything out.
I mean, I personally probably don't have a real big problem with this if we put a height limit on what they're allowed to put there, because there is an aesthetics issue. So, you know, I hate to have something. You know, allow something and somebody comes in with 20-foot high propane tank or something like that. It probably wouldn't happen, but, you know, I'd just like to see a height limit, but I probably don't have a big problem with this. As long as, you know, John or anybody doesn't see it as being a safety issue or a emergency vehicle issue, I probably wouldn't have a big problem with this. But I would like to see a height limit as to what they could put there.
What height limit?
5 feet, maybe. You know, so that wouldn't obstruct, since the original idea was that it doesn't obstruct the view or it's an aesthetic. So,
John, where the areas are going to require like a elevated base or pad in Curry Beach?
That's only going to be in the flood zone, which is only on our issue front right now.
And how much is that?
Well, that varies depending on the elevation of the lot, the flood zone location, and a couple other variables.
Yeah, it could be 5 feet off the ground.
Not in Three Beach. No. Okay. We've already got a pretty good elevation already.
I think that if we do a height limit, we have, you know, we add something in there. If it's in a flood zone, then it doesn't apply.
I mean, that's... Yeah, I mean, certainly, but I would certainly recommend tabling this item, but I think the conversation, I know certainly I'd be inclined to go with this if there's some sort of a height limit that's appropriate.
If you guys want to give me some marching orders, I can present a different amendment to you next month.
After talking, I mean, do you feel comfortable with some sort of a height limit on this from the aesthetic point of view? Because that's really what the original intention was to have.
I think we discuss it, yeah, but I'm okay with height limit.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to throw something at you, though. Never mind. Well,
please do.
Let's start selling like Jim here. 21, do you allow a 4-foot fence in that area?
You do, right? The fence is allowed in there.
Yeah. I just say, if you make it 4 feet, that would probably eliminate propane tanks. Vertical propane tanks are...
They're 50, 51 inches tall.
Yeah.
Some of your HVAC units are going to be higher than your generators.
Oh, I'd say the majority of them probably mm-hmm. aren't on those, especially the larger units. I haven't seen ones that are 4 feet tall, though.
Yeah, I would assume 5 feet would probably cover about anything that, I mean, whether it's air conditioning, propane tanks, generators, or whatever. But is there, do you want to talk about this further or just make a motion to table?
Yeah, just table.
Okay.
Our exceptions keep growing and growing. It's like sometimes I wonder, what's the value of the ordinance? To begin with, and if we keep making so many exceptions, but
yeah, I personally like very strict setbacks, but I think John made a case that there's no safety issue, which is the primary reason why we do have setbacks, and it was primarily an aesthetic issue, which is why I'm interested in some sort of a height limit.
You'll remember, you weren't part of the commission, but you were probably here, but for the exception C and D specifically, those have been interpreted as acceptable in setbacks for years and years. You know,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Requests that I made to make that clarify and add them to it. And the most recent exception is E for disability grants, which I felt that was a need in and of itself for our community as a retirement community. But anyway.
And we've certainly had a lot of discussions, including swimming pools and everything else in these.
Well, and that's what most of them have been, storage sheds, showers.
Right.
And most recently, swimming pools.
And I remember when we had the discussion of storage sheds, too, because somebody came for that, and then we pointed out, I think you pointed out, well, you know, we do have rules, but there's a lot of non-conforming storage sheds in Kiri Beach, and then the whole question is, you know, enforcement then, you know, that sort of thing. So, but anyway, we got a motion to table. I'll second that. And is there any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I did.
You
made the motion.
Kathleen.
Oh, okay.
I did?
Oh, I thought you did, to table. Said you were tired of talking about it.
Okay, I made the motion.
It sounds like a motion.
Okay. So anyway, I don't know if you want to talk to him again. I mean, you probably heard the, but it's hard to take action. All right, that's it. Is there a motion to adjourn? But before I do that, let's talk about our next meeting. We generally talk about make sure it's okay, particularly during summer when people take vacations. Our next meeting is scheduled for when?
August 4th.
Is there a problem with August 4th for anybody?
No, the way I understand it, it's set. It's pretty well set in stone. Yeah. It's the first Wednesday.
Okay. All right.
So it's August 4th. So we're us to be available.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
I motion.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.